of the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. A very important news development has emerged in the last number of days or so, and it's something that you need to pay close attention to. What I'm talking about specifically is this mythological war. Is that what it is? Is it a mythological war or is it a real war? And what's the purpose of the war? Now, what concerns me and what concerns a lot of other people is that in this conflict between Russia and the Ukraine, there are a number of uncertain factors. But these uncertain factors affect you and they affect me in very serious ways. And I'll tell you the primary way that it could potentially impact you and impact me. Is it possible that there are powers in the world right now, very powerful powers? Is it possible that some of the most powerful players in the world want to agitate a conflict between Russia and the Ukraine to such an extent that it becomes a plausible World War III scenario? And of course, a plausible World War III scenario would also entail either a regional nuclear conflict with dirty bombs. And by dirty bombs, I mean not dropping, you know, full-on nuclear bombs that detonate with massive mushroom clouds. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about a dirty bomb in the classical sense of the word, where you detonate a traditional explosive, high-powered explosive like C4, or any other of a number of very powerful explosives, but sprayed, and perhaps sprayed is not the best word, but dispersed into the material that you're using to build this dirty bomb, you have a certain percentage of highly radioactive material, dust, particles, or whatever. So what happens in a dirty bomb scenario is the dirty bomb goes off in a city, usually, because it can do maximum damage in a city. Wind blows, and all of a sudden, the radioactive materials that were not used to detonate the dirty bomb, but the radioactive materials that were used as kind of an add-on ingredient to the bomb, they are artificially dispersed into crowds up into the atmosphere, and they can be dispersed on a windy day or whatever. They can be dispersed, you know, 100 miles or more, depending upon wind factors and things like that. So the danger of a dirty bomb is not the explosive power released by nuclear material that has been designed to create a nuclear bomb. The danger in a dirty bomb is that you have the dirty bomb infused with all kinds of nuclear material, and when it detonates or it's dropped from somewhere, that radioactive material, like a pollutant, is moved through the air, the atmosphere, cities, and those microscopic radioactive particles infect people. And what happens in the immediate future and the near future and so on and so forth is people begin to die in radioactive poisoning. And radioactive poisoning kills you. Very dangerous. So could it be that some power somewhere across the globe is trying to stir something up to create a manufactured crisis. You know, the playbook for radical revolutionaries, the marching orders for radical revolutionaries, has always been the following occult principle. It's right out of their playbook. And the occult principle that they go back to over and over again is called order out of chaos. Order out of chaos. And order out of chaos is their goal, to generate the maximum amount of chaos or crisis, order out of crisis or order out of chaos. The goal is to generate the maximum amount of chaos or crisis so that in the chaos and in the crisis, you can do all kinds of things that you couldn't normally do in any kind of conventional scenario. So let's say hypothetically in Southern California or other states in the United States, let's say we have a continued heat wave of atmospheric conditions which are very hot, and that causes us to have to contact other states or the federal government to get water artificially pumped into Southern California, California, Nevada, or wherever. So there you have a crisis. At this point, you don't know if it's a manufactured crisis or not. All you know is that you have a water shortage, and in this kind of environment where it's so, or well, we're in a drought, in this kind of environment, you are in a dangerous crisis zone or chaos zone, because of if, you know, 20 million people don't have water or sufficient water, the system begins to collapse, and you have people dying of dehydration. You have people dying from mass crime waves. And so within the context of a crisis or chaos or a manufactured crisis, you have the on button for a revolution of some kind. How bad it gets, well, nobody knows at this point, but the potential is there. Now, with a dirty bomb, you detonate a dirty bomb, which is usually a conventional explosive. A conventional explosive would be dynamite, C4, other conventional explosives that are used by the military, and they're used by construction. And they have enormous detonation power, enormous. When you intermingle, if you will, those components with radioactive material, then you amplify the power of C4 or dynamite. You amplify its the deadliness of the power, because now you're dispersing the radioactive particles in the atmosphere, and now you're going to have thousands, if not tens of thousands or more, people getting radiation poisoning and getting sick and dying, or having their children getting sick and dying from radiation poisoning. So in this particular instance, the hypothetical question or the military question that would be asked is there somebody, an invisible hand, prodding along, stirring along, pushing along invisibly a scenario that would force a government a terrorist group or whatever to detonate a nuclear or radioactive dirty bomb. And so the explosive charge goes off with a very loud bang. But when the wind blows on the radioactive material, it spreads a tremendous amount of miles and can inflict radiation poisoning on people in a very serious way. So what is happening with Russia, the Ukraine? And some people are actually asking the question, is the left agitating? Is the left trying to stir up a war with Russia so it can cause a total lockdown or domestic tyranny or a state of martial law? Remember that our government, under any number of provocations, is allowed to enact or order or call for a state of martial law if the crisis or the chaos warrants it. So if we have a very serious crisis, let's say we have not a actual World War III crisis, let's say we have what appears to be a World War III crisis event, a chaos event. Now, does that justify martial law? Well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. I'm not a general. You're not a general. A general or a group of generals or the Defense Department or whoever, they would analyze the situation, add up all the positives and negatives, what would happen to our inner cities, what would happen to our food supply, what would happen to our water supply, what level of socioeconomic destruction would kick in, what level of rioting, looting, internal revolution would happen, what level of anarchy, and what level of potential radical groups, what level of potential radical groups would there be if they tried to use this type of scenario to call for martial law? Would they say it's a national state of emergency and we're going to have to call for martial law? Otherwise, we would be in a very serious place and it would jeopardize our national security, which it would, by the way. Because if the United States of America began to suffer from a high level of internal chaos, internal disruption, that would look like riots in the streets, armed looters, armed terrorists, domestic terrorists potentially, that have their hands on very deadly weapons. And they start to detonate these weapons, all kinds of them, sporadically across the United States of America. You have a total state of anarchy. And so the military or the president may very well call for an official state of martial law. Now, what does that mean? In the most simplest terms, it simply means this. A state of martial law is when you call for the U.S. military and the army and the full force of the American military to immediately take over, to immediately run things. Somebody makes the decision that America cannot run itself at this particular point. And so when you call for a state of martial law, you are calling for a state which gives legal permission, full legal permission, for the military to take over and run the government of the United States of America. So it's no longer we the people in terms of the citizens of the United States running America. It's the military, the generals, the tanks, the various branches of the military that are in the position of ruling America via martial law. And that can happen very easily, especially in the situation with the Ukraine and Russia and NATO and the United States. Because if that situation gets out of hand, let's say the Russians fire a nuclear missile, and let's say it's a dirty bomb, but communication lines get confused, and the next thing you know, you have hundreds of thousands of innocent civilians dying in a crisis chaos event that wasn't planned for. So what do you do? Well, in most cases, they would call for the military to intervene, and they would call for the military to take over the rule of law. And that, a lot of people don't understand what this entails. This is not a pretty picture. When the military takes over, when the military takes the place of our civil government, right now, you and I live under a relatively benign civil government where we have all kinds of rights and privileges. But if that rulership is given over to the military, the U.S. military, then we are no longer being ruled by a constitutional government where we have a Bill of Rights and a Constitution. And we take it for, we're spoiled in America. We take it for granted that we have all these rules and protections and rights. And we do. When we're functioning properly, we do have all these rights and protections. But if something goes really bad, if the system is flipped or damaged or thrown into a catastrophic state, then we no longer have that relative societal state of peace where we have all kinds of rights and freedoms and protections. When a nation goes into martial law, even the United States, it's an immediate transfer of power from government with voters and votes and all kinds of rights and protections and the ability to appeal through the courts and to have lawyers. All those rights you take for granted are immediately done away with. And now you're in a situation where the military is ruling the nation, like America, with an iron fist. All the traditional laws that protect citizens, all the traditional laws that protect the American way, they're done away with in, let's say, 24 hours. And who is running our nation is pure military might. Now, again, most Americans really don't fathom, really can't comprehend what that means, because they've never had to live in such a situation. Anybody who has had to live under military law in a military police state knows how dangerous and threatening that is, because you have no court to appeal to. You're driving down the street. Soldiers tell you to pull over. They aim there are guns at you, you're surrounded by several military vehicles and, you know, 15 soldiers carrying high-powered rifles or weapons. You're ordered out of the car. You're ordered to put your hands up or whatever. And then you may, with the snap of your fingers, be taken away to some kind of concentration or re-education camp. Now, there's at this point, the normal procedures for making an appeal or an inquiry into the justification of your arrest, that's now non-existent. So your rights are up for grabs. And that's why our government has gone out of its way since the very beginning with the Constitution and the Bill of Rights. Our government has gone out of its way in exercising an enormous amount of restraint, protecting our normal civil law structure. Because when it's taken away, even momentarily, we become like Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde. We become a police state. And so in a police state, let's say there's a civilian auto accident and two civilians collide into each other with their cars because somebody isn't paying attention at the traffic light. And a military soldier, because now it's the military that's running everything. It's the military that's running the show. They point at you or they point at the other person. They say, get out of the car. For whatever reason, you didn't hear them or you freaked out or whatever. And your chances are up. The guns of the soldiers are aimed directly at you. You don't obey the orders, there's a very strong possibility you could get shot and killed because the normal chain of command is disrupted. And so everything is run by the military. Every street corner that required one would have jeeps and tanks. Tanks would go down streets. Armed military vehicles would go down streets conducting searches and seizures and everything else. So a normal way of life is totally, totally suspended. This is the Paul McGuire Report. I'm Paul McGuire. I need you to help me spread these messages, these teaching messages, the teaching of a biblical worldview and apply it to what's going on in America and other nations. We're at the most critical time in the history of this nation. And I'm discussing, excuse me, today's topic because our freedoms are in perilous times. Our freedoms are eggshell fragile. And the main reason our freedoms have eggshell fragility is because there's external pressure being applied to a hollow eggshell. Now, I'm using this analogy, you know, like it just popped into my consciousness. But if you apply external pressure on a hollow eggshell, it's not going to take much external pressure for that eggshell to collapse from within. It doesn't have the power in it internally to withstand external pressure, external societal, political, social, economic forces. And when you don't understand history, when you yourself know little or nothing about history, historical precedent. When you don't know, for example, the history in the last 150 years, when you don't know the history of martial law and when it's been applied, when you don't know the history of communist, Marxist, socialist revolutions, and the social mechanisms that are used, the ploys that are used, the plans that are used, the manipulative operations that are used, always for the same purpose, to deceive the masses of people as quickly as possible. And once you've deceived the masses of people as quickly as possible, then when you have them trapped in your grasp, you seize control over them in the style of a dictatorship. And then what you've been hiding from them, because you've been exploiting their naivete for so many decades, and for so many decades you have systematically dumbed down their children, the adults, the educational systems. You have systematically dumbed down the students and the adults. So at a certain point, when that external pressure is applied, the system cannot hold together. The system has no resilience. The system has no internal fortitude. It has no inner pressure to withstand the external pressure. So when you do an historical analysis, which, by the way, is the responsibility of any thinking Christian in leadership, whether you're a pastor or a minister or a Bible teacher, Bible study leader, or whatever, whatever area you serve in, it is your responsibility to have what the Bible talks about as a biblical worldview. It is your responsibility before God to know the Word of God to such a degree to be exceptionally proficient in how well you can handle the Word of God. And by that I mean, are you proficient in handling the Word of God? Do you understand how to apply the truths of God's Word, a biblical worldview? Do you understand how to apply a biblical worldview to the ebb and flow of radical, historical, revolutionary change in a society, if and when those changes should come in forms like socialism, martial law, or whatever? Are you resilient enough to understand what's happening and how to lead God's people and how to strategically avoid the pitfalls, the traps, and most of all, is your biblical worldview strong enough, robust enough? Is it strong enough to withstand pressure from the outside that is financed with vast dollar amounts that most people don't know anything about? Most people think that the disequilibrium that they observe in like contemporary American society, most people think, well, it's just happen chance, you know. La-di-da. That's what they think. They don't understand that behind the illusion, behind the manufactured facade, there is another reality. And that reality is there are very, very powerful people that are financing the crisis, the revolutionary conditions, the radical changes. They're all being financed with hundreds of millions of dollars externally. It's not coming out of nowhere. Let me repeat that. The changes are not coming out of nowhere. They're systematically being driven by hundreds of millions of dollars. I know this intellectually because I've studied it and have discovered incredible documentation. But more importantly, as somebody who was once upon a time in my life naive, ignorant of history, ignorant of the history of revolutionary causes, ignorant of the real purpose behind what back then was called the movement, the revolution that I was part of. And I have written this all down in my brand new book, which I hope to have released to you soon. Those of you that have pre-ordered it, I apologize for being delayed, but it was either that or send you a book that was obsolete, and I can't do that. My conscience would. This book has a very powerful message that's totally applicable for what's happening in America today. I couldn't send out to you a book on pre-order that was no longer relevant. I couldn't do it. So I put the brakes on it. I have totally rewritten the book to make it cutting edge and as relevant as possible. And I talk about my own personal experiences growing up in New York City, starting at age 13 years old, where I was being recruited by the radical left. I was a leader in the radical left of the counterculture of the 1960s. So I was close to Abby Hoffman, the radical leader, and I learned from him how to affect radical changes. I was made a member of the Black Panther Party, not the current Black Panther Party, the original historical Black Panther Party, which was far more powerful because it was far more intellectual. And as I've shared with you before, you know, I've done a lot of debates on national television programs like Fox News Network and many of the biggest shows in secular television. And I would debate people and I would tell my story. And sometimes I would debate an African-American civil rights activist. And I support African-American civil rights. But you see, the difference between the people that I was debating with and myself was that I was actually in the center of the African-American radical movement. I was in the center of it. I hung out with the leaders of it, and I was made a member of the Black Panther Party. And I would say that alive on air, and, you know, there would be no more debate because the person that I was debating would have to retreat and give up because I could rattle off the names of the original Black Panthers, their quotations, what they stood for, their educational background. I knew backwards and forwards the actual history of the original Black Panther Party. I was at the demonstrations. I was at the meetings with the biggest leaders in the Black Panther Party. So you have to know history to know, to project where things are going to go. So having known firsthand and personally the history of the Black Panther Party, and participating in their demonstrations and their planning meetings, I know what, for example, the real agenda is behind socialism and civil rights. I know the real history of critical race theory and critical theory. It's really a tragedy that the majority of Christian pastors I'll just talk about white Christian pastors right now, because I'm white. But it's really a tragedy because they get involved in things, but they're completely uneducated. To be blunt, they're completely illiterate when it comes to the history of the civil rights movement, of the original Black Panther Party, and all these other related factors. I was not illiterate or uneducated about it. I was trained. I worked hand in hand with some of the most famous leaders in the white counterculture as well as the African American counterculture. I know the history of critical theory. I talk to white pastors all the time, and they know absolutely nothing. Please understand what I'm saying. I'm not trying to be cruel. I'm not trying to disparage anybody. But they know absolutely nothing about critical theory, the history of critical theory, who invented critical theory, and consequently, who invented critical race theory and what the real agenda and purpose of critical race theory is and was. You see, I hung out with, demonstrated with, and was in the highest level and secret meetings of the radical activists of the 1960s and the 1970s. And I know what they said publicly, the radical leaders. I'm talking about white radical leaders right now. I know what they said publicly versus what they said privately. And you have, you know, all communist movements, all Marxist socialist movements, all radical movements, all use the same operating principles, and they all proceed via deception, psychological deception, historical deception, political deception. All communist, socialist, radical movements proceed and advance by way of deception. But I talk to white pastors, they're completely oblivious. It's like they don't even have a nursery school education or a nursery school awareness of the history of critical theory and critical race theory and things of that nature. They're completely clueless. Well, I'm not completely clueless because I was there when they celebrated the first Earth Day in the United States of America. I was like 14 years old, and the first Earth Day celebration was in Manhattan, New York City, and all the big activists were there, black, white. And I remember being allowed in because I had hair down to my waist, and my face was known among a lot of the radical leaders like Abby Hoffman. And I remember being allowed in a private and semi-secret meeting among the radical leaders at the first Earth Day celebration in Manhattan. And I remember them standing up and saying out loud the following, which I'm going to tell you. And shame on people, white people or black people, who follow these revolutionary movements, and yet they don't have a clue as to what the real agenda is. So I'm sitting in this large tent at the first Earth Day celebration. And outside, you know, there's rock and roll bands, Abby Hoffman speaking, and inside in the tent, the leaders of the radical movement, I could name their names, I'm not sure most of you would know who they are, but they were saying that today is an historical day, and they were making this acknowledgement that the Vietnam War peace movement was over. In other words, the radical left in America had been using the Vietnam War peace movement as a cover to build their radical revolutionary communist movement. And that included the Weather Underground, which I refused to join because I could see through the facade. I could see that the Weather Underground was in-your-face evil. And its end game, the end game, I mean, they talked about it in the open. The end game of the Weather Underground, this is like Bernadine Dorn and I forgot her husband, both friends of one of our presidents. And their goal was to initiate a violent revolution in the United States of America based on the tenets of Marxism and communism. So we're in the tent, and the leaders of the radical left are saying that today's an historic day, and we need to rejoice because this is the end of the movement, the revolutionary movement that supported and energized all the giant national demonstrations against the Vietnam War. So they came out and finally admitted in the open that for all these decades that the radical left was the true organizing group that organized all these anti-war, anti-Vietnam demonstrations. And then they said in the open, they said, now that the public bonding or whatever has ended between the American people and the days of protest against the Vietnam War, those days are now over. We can no longer count on young Americans and college students. We can no longer count on them to rally with us in massive national protests against the Vietnam War because the Vietnam War is over. So the new strategy, they said, and they just set it out in the open, the new strategy, they said, is that we as a movement are going to become a movement that is built on radical environmentalism and a radical ecological movement. So, you know, green, the environment, ecology, and that's why they had organized Earth Day. So they were making an official announcement to the leaders of the radical counterculture, and I was one of the young leaders. And the announcement was that the thrust of direction was to capture the energy, the passion of college students and young people and the youth movement to capture their energy surrounding their concern over the environment, over ecology, and generate a new movement that is fueled by the emotional passions that will sustain long-term protests against, you know, things like global warming and pollution and stuff like that. So there I was in that pivotal decision. Now, but I also learned other things. And one of the things that I learned is that, you know, These radical revolutionary leaders knew how to, for lack of better words, quote, play, manipulate, hustle naive white people because they exploited their naivete. And the average white person then, just like today, doesn't have a clue. They're clueless. And so once again, we see millions of white people, even million, millions of white people being exploited because of their lack of knowledge and cluelessness. And they're being, even pastors today are being seduced and brainwashed via classic Marxist propaganda strategies. And they're being indoctrinated. And the precise word for what's happening is, yes, they are being indoctrinated into becoming radical leftist communist activists that are buying the bait of deception regarding critical theory and getting hooked on critical theory. But critical theory is just a facade, an illusion to get Christian pastors and Christian Bible teachers to enroll them in the movement. And everybody who was part of the movement, such as myself, knew that the movement meant, secretly, it meant the communist movement, the socialist movement, the radical leftist movement. That's the movement that they were talking about. And so right now, as I'm speaking to you, all across the United States of America, and this has been going on for quite a while, and I have been warning about it since before it became public knowledge. So even though you may have just heard about it recently or relatively recently, on this program, the Paul McGuire Report, I have been functioning according to one of my biblical callings, which is a watchman on the wall. And I've been blowing the trumpet of warning regarding the true nature of critical race theory. It's a wolf in sheep's clothing. So these trajectories of radical movements are both accelerating in America and Europe. And we have to remember that the big money, hundreds of millions of dollars that are bankrolling these movements are coming from people like Klaus Schwab and the Global Reset and George Soros and people of that nature. Because it was people of that nature that were financing the white radical activists in my generation. So these two movements are coming together with the end game. Now, what's the end game? It's very important that you have no fuzzy logic in regards to what the end game is. It should be every Christian should be crystal clear as to what the reality of the end game is. Because you will either know the truth and you'll be set free, or you're gonna get caught in the crossfire. And the radical left, remember, the goal of the radical left, and I was in the radical left starting at 12 years old in Manhattan, New York City. The radical left was financed by Rockefeller and the Manhattan billionaires. That's who financed the radical left. And the radical left are the ones financing the Great Reset, Black Lives Matter, woke culture, the latest Black Panther Party. The radical left you have to understand that the radical left is in reality the foot soldier for the globalist elite. So when you think radical left, don't think of a bunch of college students. The radical left is being financed by the international banking families, and the radical left is being financed by the international banking families and the super capitalist billionaire families, and they use deception. And I have been in many meetings when I was a teenager in Manhattan, hanging out with very, very wealthy, the sons and daughters of extremely wealthy radical leftists, you know, whose parents owned major, major multinational corporations. And they were financing all these radical leftist movements as they are now. Now, what's the end game? It was the globalist elite in the communist Russian revolution in Russia. It was the globalist elite, the Wall Street bankers that were financing the communist revolution in communist China. Always remember that whenever you see a movement, a communist revolution, a Marxist revolution, or a socialist revolution, always remember that those revolutions are always being financed by the globalist elite, the international banking families, and the super capitalist billionaire families. And what their end game is, how they want to play this out, is they want the conflict between Russia and the Ukraine to spill over to the U.S. and the European Union so they can radicalize a revolution and bring in martial law in the United States. It's a game always. It's a game of perpetual deception. Perpetual deception. Never forget that. That's what we're involved in, a game of perpetual deception. And so consistently, I would meet people whose parents were like super, super rich. And their parents were in one way or another financing these radical leftist multinational corporations. And their game plan was always the same. Order out of chaos, order out of crisis. So the key revolutionary strategy is to create artificial crisis, manufactured crisis, in order to create a revolution. When you create a revolution, you can throw away the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the rule of law, and then you can have the radicals and the military take over any given nation. That's the game plan. That's what they want to do. Now, just because that's what they want to do, it doesn't mean they will succeed in what they want to do. But we have two problems. So I'm issuing to you a call to action. It's imperative that you become as educated and as informed as you possibly can on these topics, because ultimately it's a life or death matter for you, your family, your children, et cetera, et cetera. Number two is there are white Christian church leaders all over the United States of America who have been deceived by the propagandists on the left. They've been deceived and recruited by the propagandists on the left. And they don't understand, because they're misinformed. They don't understand that the entire radical left politics is built on deception and propaganda and social engineering and mind control. So whenever you hear a white Christian or an African-American Christian extol the praises and say just how great critical race theory is. They are completely uneducated regarding critical race theory. I was speaking on, debating on what is called critical race theory when I was 12 and 13 years old in Manhattan, New York City. Why? Because I was raised not in a Christian home. I was raised in an atheistic, secular humanist, existentialist household in New York City. My friends' parents were all intellectuals, very creative, movers and shakers, and we discussed these things all the time. So we were very familiar with all of this. Now, critical race theory officially began in 1917, which was the first year the Communist Revolution was started in Russia. Now, in 1917, that was also the year that a group of communist, Marxist, college university professors that were trained by the secret police, the KGB, in Moscow, Russia. These Marxist professors picked up and moved from Moscow, Russia. They moved to Frankfurt, Germany, and they became known as the Frankfurt School Marxists. And their strategy was to infiltrate and penetrate all the universities, the colleges, film, the arts, to infiltrate the university systems, the college systems, and the church systems, and to begin to brainwash the professors and the students into believing that critical theory was going to save them. But you see, critical theory was a facade. It was deception. And I knew this because I read the novels and the books by most of the celebrity authors who were Frankfurt School Marxists. This is what I didn't go to baseball games. I would read books like One Dimensional Man by Marcuse, a Frankfurt School Marxist and celebrity intellectual, and many others. I would read their books. Abby Hoffman, the radical activist, told me to read their books, and I read their books. And all of their books, they indoctrinated the reader like me that the best way to ignite a communist, socialist, Marxist revolution in America is to do it through igniting a series of cultural and college and university revolutions on the campuses of Christians and just, you know, Yale and Harvard and places like that, indoctrinate the students, create a artificial youth movement, and then from an artificial youth movement, create a revolutionary force that works through culture, education, books, filmmaking, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's what I plunged myself into. And I understood that the Frankfurt School Marxists, the professors, that their game plan was to indoctrinate the students. And they specialized in one particular area of indoctrination. And that is, and was, and is currently going on today, that's the indoctrination of Christian students, Christian professors, Christian pastors were on the top of the list to be indoctrinated because Christians in every realm were also on the top of the list to be brainwashed and to be used as tools in a Marxist socialist revolution. So this is how it played out. The primary goals of the Frankfurt School Marxists were, number one, to destroy totally all forms of Christianity, the Christian family, the concept of a Christian God, the concept of a Christian Bible. The goal of the Frankfurt School Marxist professors was to destroy all of that in the hearts and minds of the Christian professors and the Christian students and the Christian pastors. To destroy all concepts of absolute right, absolute wrong. Totally destroy it. Now, focus in with me on this strategic strike point, okay? Because this is what's happening in America now. And if you don't wake up, and if we don't work together in waking millions of people up as fast as we can, we're going to lose our nation in a revolutionary purge whose principles were developed and began being implemented in 1917. Which was the year that the communist revolution exploded in communist Russia. The other purposes of the Frankfurt School Marxist professors was to destroy nationalism, to destroy patriotism, so on and so forth. So, the Frankfurt Marxist School professors indoctrinated and brainwashed through the Christian college professors, through the Christian pastors, through the Christian denominations, through the Christian Bible study leaders. The Frankfurt School Marxists transformed theological education into a mind control propaganda machine, brainwashing machine. The Frankfurt School radical communist professors transformed what was called the Frankfurt School of theological higher criticism. The first wave of the Frankfurt School attack on American culture and Christian culture, phase one was the attack on the Frankfurt School Marxist professors and their all-out intellectual and theological attack on all the students in Germany and European universities that were going to Frankfurt School universities and colleges where they were being indoctrinated. And the name of the indoctrination process was called the Frankfurt School. Okay, Frankfurt Revolutionary Procedure. And so they taught that capitalism and free enterprise and the family and traditional values, traditional sexual morals, etc. They indoctrinated the students into believing all biblical and traditional values were evil. Then they refined their indoctrination process somewhat, and they changed it from the German schools of theological higher criticism, and they broadened the scope to the simply the German schools of higher criticism. So right now, the phase of operation that is intellectually being militarized and unleashed on Christian pastors and Christian Bible teachers and denominations and churches and seminaries is this. It's called It's a revision, a revised form of the German theological schools of higher criticism. what the agenda of the German schools of theological higher criticism is this: to completely blitzkrieg the minds of Christian students, Christian pastors, Christian denominational heads, Christian professors, all Christian theological schools, all Bible studies, etc., etc., are completely revamped, and then through a brainwashing process known as higher criticism, the Christian students are indoctrinated into believing that the Bible is completely false. Jesus performed no miracles. Jesus did not resurrect from the dead. Jesus is not coming back at the second coming. There is no literal heaven. There is no literal hell. Okay? Through the technique of higher criticism, which is just a fancy way of saying we're going to get our head in your heads and convince you falsely, based on lies, we're going to totally convince you that everything you think you know about the Bible is a lie and a falsehood and a deception, and that there is no miracles, the Bible is not true, the Bible is faulty, evolution is true, and so they begin to deconstruct. Remember the term. They're going to continue to deconstruct Christianity out of the hearts and minds of the students. Now, simultaneously, while they're putting the Christian students through what's called a theological deconstruction process, so in Germany when that was happening, at the same exact time that the Christian students were going through a deconstruction process, all the secular German students who were going to the German schools were being enthusiastically educated in, indoctrinated in, encouraged to participate in the most powerful occult teachings known to man: meditation, Satanism, the teachings of Aleister Crowley, occult drugs like mescaline and LSD. And so on one hand, there's a battering ram on the consciousness of Christian students designed to decimate any belief they have in biblical Christianity, while simultaneously, they are successfully indoctrinating, promoting, evangelizing students to believe in the occult, Satanism, Luciferianism, and the actual working reality, the viable reality of supernatural powers like the Nazi occult power known as the Vril Force, V-R-I-L, etc., etc. So that's exactly where we are now. And every person is responsible before God for hearing the marching orders of our supreme commander, Jesus Christ. We're all responsible for hearing the marching orders of Jesus Christ. There are countless thousands of pastors. It's a tragedy. I know some of these men. They're nice guys. Their hearts are in the right place. They're sincere. I'm not saying they're bad people. They're not bad people. They're good people. But that precisely is the problem. Satan, yeah, there's a real Satan, and he's exploiting the decency and the honor and the inner desire that these men and women have to authentically do right. The devil is exploiting their authentic desire to do right and just, to create social justice. And by the way, the very term social justice was invented by the Frankfurt School Marxists. Social justice is a revolutionary Marxist strategy, a communist strategy, Social justice is a communist Marxist strategy developed by the Illuminati leader Mazzini, and it was designed to have the Italian government pay and for the poor and have the government clothe the poor and feed the poor, et cetera, et cetera. The idea was to destroy in the consciousness of the Christian Italian Catholics and Christian Italian Christians was to destroy in their minds any consciousness which said that it's the church's job to feed the poor, clothe the naked, etc., etc. But good intentions are not enough, because the Bible teaches us that there are wolves in sheep's clothing, and those wolves have infiltrated the seminaries and the denominations and many Christian religious institutions. So there's only one thing we can do. If we continue to surrender the minds of the young people, the minds of the pastors and the seminary professors, if we continue to surrender our minds on the altars of Luciferian doctrine, we're going to lose this nation in open violence in the streets. We don't have that much more time left to turn it around. Right now, God has given us the time we need, and if we would be willing to employ effective strategies, we can turn this thing entirely around. But in order to do that, we have to teach the people that are being deceived exactly how they're being deceived. And that's one of the purposes of this ministry, Paul McGuire Ministries. I need your help, because the hour is really late. I need your help. I need you to stand with me. I need you to help spread this information, spread the truth, spread the message of a truly biblical worldview to as many Christians and as young people as fast as we can before it's too late. I need you to come alongside of me and help me to finance reaching these people as fast as we can all over the nation and the world. I need you to stand with me in your donations and your contributions and your finances. I need you to militantly, in a law-abiding manner, become a spiritual prayer warrior for me, this ministry, and the people involved in this ministry. And then finally, I need you to spread the messages, the links, the audio, the books, and everything else as far and wide. If we don't successfully launch a peaceful, law-abiding, and most of all, loving counter-revolution to stop the demonic armies from creating a Luciferian revolution based on mass deception, if we don't stop it now, we have not that many months till we pass the expiration date. And I think you know what that means. This is Paul McGuire. Visit paulmcguire.us. That's paulmcguire.us.